Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You're listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. As always, I am with my two guys. First off, fresh off some technical difficulty, but he's here, Mr. Matt Welty.
Why'd you have to put in technical difficulty?
I'm just happy that this is working.
Hey, listen, 60 plus, well, how many episodes? A year plus, and you know, we started 11 minutes late, but that's okay because my other guy is here. He was on time. He is feeling refreshed. No technical difficulties. Mr. Brendan Dunn.
I'm here. Can we talk about the technical difficulties, Welty?
It was a struggle.
Yeah, so, we want to be transparent with the people. What happened?
Well, it's funny because for total transparency, last Friday before we shot the episode of Full Size Run, it was about 10 minutes before the shoot. I'm on a Zoom call for for this podcast, and I sit up and grab my laptop by the corner of the screen.
Stop right there.
That'll make you 11 minutes late for the next 2 weeks, but go ahead.
You grabbed it by the screen?
No, by the corner of the base, like not by the top of it. I put my hand like on the keyboard in like the corner, like where it connects.
Okay.
I just grabbed it right there, and when I picked it up like that, the screen cracked.
Oof.
And the whole screen went black like 10 minutes before the shoot, and I had to...
I'm not going to lie, when you first explained this situation to me, I thought you had been in the regular habit of grabbing your computer from just the top of the laptop screen like a caveman.
No. I grabbed it.
I appreciate the clarity, the transparency.
I picked it up by the bottom corner, and somehow the screen cracked, and I had to hit up our producer, Alejandro, and was like, SOS, 10 minutes before the shoot, that like, I don't know what's going to happen. I need to record this thing from my phone, and I was stressing the fuck out. And you can go listen to that right now. Episode with Nicky Diamonds, because it's amazing.
Nick Diamond, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome. But you have a new computer now. No more technical difficulties.
We're here. We're live. We're enjoying life. We're living life. Shout out to Money Kicks.
It's beautiful out. Beautiful day in New York.
I feel like the winter is officially over. It feels like it's over, right?
That's fingers crossed, because it gets like 60 degrees, and then the next thing you know, it's going to be 22 the next week.
That's true.
You know what? I feel like the winter is over, and I didn't wear enough of my good jackets. For me, I have this thing where you have all your good jackets lined up and you're like, I don't want to kill them this winter, you know, just do each one maybe once or twice, and then you let the whole time go by and you were saving them and you never really got to do your thing.
It happens a lot. I've never been into big winter jackets. This year was the first time that I got a big winter jacket, which is funny because we can't go outside.
Yeah.
A little bit of irony there. But I see what you're saying. And
what
now
jacket was it?
It was a Moncler. They take up so much.
You got the Moncler bubble?
Yeah, it was a Moncler bubble. They take up so much room in the closet, though.
I do remember a Complex holiday party where JLP came through in the Moncler in this huge nightclub that they rented out, and it was like 90 degrees in there, and he's still wearing the fur jacket in the middle.
I came from Aspen. Oh. It was the Kith trip. It was the Kith trip. So
the Clairport with Ronnie Fieg.
The Kith red Moncler. Yes, I remember that. It got hot in there. That's true. I will agree. Got hot in there.
I was out and about this past weekend, and it was one of those tricky days where it's sunny out. And you think, oh, it's gonna be lovely, and then you step outside and it's still brick. But I had a good time walking up the Bowery, you know, looking at graffiti. I'm pretty sure I saw on the street John Wilson. You guys watch John Wilson, How To with John Wilson on HBO?
No.
I'm a huge John Wilson stan. If you guys haven't seen his stuff on HBO, please go watch it. It's moving, it's touching, beautiful portraits, vignettes. And I just saw him walking across Houston, and the people, we were kind of like, wait, is that... And I'm upset that I didn't get a chance to go tell him how much I love his work. But that was my fun outing for the weekend.
Yeah, I went to New York for the first time in a while, too.
You did?
And it was very, very cold and funny because had a, I guess I had a reverse of that situation where I had gone to the Whitney and then was getting lunch after, and I get a DM from some random person who's probably listening to this who was like, hey, bro, I saw you on the streets eating eating lunch. I didn't want to run up on you. Or something like that, and I was like, "Thank you for not doing that. Not to be rude, but
look at the level of fame that is."
Where were you eating lunch?
Down in Meatpacking, all places. Yeah,
you went to Serafina.
Joe, is Serafina good? I've never been to a Serafina in my life. I know.
I like Serafina.
Is it Italian?
Yeah, it's Italian. The one in Meatpacking. I got the chicken Molinese there.
Okay. They brown the chicken. They fry the chicken.
Good. I like the chicken Molinese. It's chicken cutlets with like salad on it. You ever have that, yeah. Welty?
Yes, it's great.
Can we stay in Italy for a second, Joe? Because
this is the weekly. It's turning into a weekly segment. You know I'm here for it. Let's go.
I just want to let you know what's going on in my life.
Let's hear it.
I'm sticking with Godfather. I watched Godfather 2 for the first time this past weekend. I know a lot of people say it's the rare sequel that is better than the first. I would like to know your opinion as an Italian American because I still think the first is better.
That's a tough question that I would have to think about that a little more. To answer,
have to rewatch them a couple times.
I would just have to think about it. Yeah,
you off the top, you're not comfortable.
There's a little more pressure on me to answer that, so I have to think about it. I can't just fly off with
generations of family history to consider.
Yeah, listen, that's a loaded question, and I got to think about that.
Well, I'll check back in next week because I'm doing Godfather Part 3, and I know nobody likes Part 3, but I'm doing that this weekend.
So you're binging them?
Yeah, I mean it's a little separated, but okay. Yeah, trying to catch up.
Another thing that happened this weekend that me and Joe were talking about yesterday or Sunday, Joe's boy, Izzy Adesanya, who we've mentioned many times, also myself a fan of,
awesome.
fought Yam.
And this is a UFC fighter? Yes. You got to set the stage for me, because
yes,
I don't
yes,
know.
Yes,
UFC. Yes. He was the middleweight champion to light middleweight, which is from 180 or 185 to 205 pounds. Okay. Yeah. And he fought Jan Blachowicz, a fighter from Poland, and it was kind of close. The first few, kind of close. A lot of people thought Jan maybe got the first three rounds, but then in the last two rounds, I think so. And especially,
I don't know about the first three. The last two, definitely, he took him down. He took him down.
But I wouldn't say he got all of them, but he may have won two out of the first three close rounds. Maybe
we'll see. Okay.
And then the last two rounds, he just threw Izzy on the ground and got on top of him, and just it was over.
Lights out. It was a big fight in the UFC. Both total champions. Good fight. A lot of mutual respect between those two.
Yeah,
Izzy,
for sure.
Izzy took the loss in stride.
I assume, Welty, you were elated because this guy's Polish, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it just reminds me of reminds me of like hanging out with my grandparents as a
That's
kid.
That's great.
So
Welty, let me ask you this. Your background, Polish and Armenian, does that trump in all instances? Like, if you were a really big fan of a fighter, but they were going up against somebody who was Armenian, you'd have to root for the Armenian guy every time, right? I just want to know what the priority is.
Is that the Godfather question? We're gonna both of Doug's questions. We're gonna have to come back to you.
No, come on. You'd root for the Armenian guy.
I guess you feel like there's like some sort of loyalty that you need to play, or else all your other friends are gonna kind of snub their nose up at you for it. You know what I mean?
You have to.
Yeah.
Wait. How about that? Okay. If an Armenian guy is fighting a Polish guy.
Oh man, I think they actually played each other in soccer like a few years ago, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
Tough to call.
It's a tough to call one, but
okay.
Some sneaker news this week: big release, your favorite dunk of the century, done. The carpet dunk. Okay,
Joe.
Did you get one? Mind. Did you get a pair?
We both got a pair, Joe. We both got sorted out, and we both have to go pick up our pairs. And I've been told to tell you
what?
that your pair is ready for pickup at the same place where my pair is ready for pickup.
Okay, interesting.
Little back door.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you.
For both of us.
Wow, it's a great dunk.
It's yeah.
And Dunn, you put it in the Slack that, you know, some people, I don't know. Dunn, you mentioned, let's say, you mentioned it's been crazy releases recently, like, and the guest on today's podcast is going to talk about an upcoming release in a few weeks, but it really has been think about it, like such
a roller coaster,
lot of energy in terms of releases lately. The Clots, the Supreme Dunks, the Carpet Dunks, the Stussy Huaraches. What else?
So much stuff going on.
No, I'm just kind of glad that I told myself, like, don't buy any more sneakers until...
I love that. The discipline of to just abstain completely.
It's not that I don't want any of these sneakers. It's just the fact that just thinking right now, out of all the things that I need to purchase, it's like sneakers is almost like just throwing another one on top of the pile. So I just need to like weed out even further until I feel like
prioritizing.
You know,
That makes sense. Yeah.
Joe, by the way, can I take it back to another conversation we had last week just to keep the dialogue going? But you mentioned at the end of our episode about sneaker reselling how there was a pair of shoes that I wanted to sell to somebody that you were kind of middlemaning.
Yes.
And there's no progress on that deal. Ask you straight up.
What
did
shoe
I fumble
is it?
The bag?
Can't tell you the shoe. We can't tell them the shoe because people will find out.
Did I fumble the bag, Joe?
I don't know if you fumbled the bag because I think the conversation just has to – here's what I would say. This is what I think from my vantage point.
That person is in New York right now from what I saw on social media. So we could...
I know. So listen, hasn't responded. Okay. But here's what I would say. When you want a shoe, it comes in, from my experience, it comes into your brain, right? Mm-hmm. And it goes in droves. Right now you are in the period. You are, did I fumble the bag? And maybe he is... should I pull the trigger? Is an extra 500? Is an extra 200? So, those conversations are not dead, I would say. So I don't think you fumbled the bag. However,
I love this. This is Joe in full management mode. Look at this guy's talking like my agent right now.
However, I will tell you,
Dak Prescott.
I will tell you, this guy negotiates. When the guy says no, it's too high. Instead of negotiating lower, he just tells you the same price that the guy already that the guy already said no to. So, listen, maybe we work on the negotiation skills. But I appreciate you standing firm. I don't think you fumbled it. It's just a matter of, I think that with sneakers, sometimes the thought comes into your head like, no, I need them, and then maybe the conversation gets picked up again. Does that make sense?
I don't want to leave Wealthy. I feel like we're
fine. No, it's fine. Because I mean, I guess this was like the same exact conversation that I had a middleman with Joe and the G-Unit, the signed G-Unit sneakers, where he wanted them so bad, but he's like, no, I'm only paying this much. And then
how
Paul
long
was
did
like,
it take? A couple months.
It did, because you wanted the shoes, you were ready to do it, and I had to convince him to go down to the lower amount that Joe was finally like, I will pay this much money, but I'm not paying you anymore. But I really want them, but I'm not paying anymore.
He's pulling them out right now. I love that.
It works out. So done. I don't think it's a dead conversation yet.
Okay. So. And I don't want to be obtuse or coy for our listeners. It's just sometimes you got to keep these business transactions a little between yourselves. But we like to let you into our world. Can I talk about another reselling thing? I don't want to beat this dead horse. Obviously, we did reselling all last week. Want to say real quick, the Hébert scandal at Nike. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
We talked about it on Full Size Run this week. We got a couple banger pieces up on the site right now about it. We got some insight for you into the internal meeting that Nike had about it. So, you know, hopefully that's enough for you people for right now.
One of the funnier stories that I guess that came out of the Nick Diamond interview that I mentioned to Joe, and I think it's funny to bring up.
Oh, dude.
During the middle of the interview, we're talking about the Canary Dunks, and obviously we were all there for all of the wild stuff. I know, Brendan, you had told the story about like Nick blessing you with the white pair.
Tell him, Walty.
At Complex Con. And, you know, you were like worried that like someone was going to run up on you when you had the shoes and
all
the
bad. Did I say that?
I think so. I think you had. Or, okay. I don't know if you
no, no, no,
said
I
it
did,
on
I
here.
Did. You're totally right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was a little scared.
So we had hit up Nick about it because remember Joe really wanted the shoes. And me, Joe, and Nick Diamond all wear the same size, 11 and a half. And I had told Nick that, you know, Joe was interested in the shoes because we've been talking about Nick to try and get on Full Size Run for a while. And he's like, you know what? I have all my personal pairs of the Canaries, which were like the one that everyone was going for.
Super
and he was
limited.
Like, you know what? He's like, I like you guys. You know, I'll hook you up with a personal pair, with his personal pairs of the Canaries, not from the actual stock that they were trying to sell. So at ComplexCon that year, Joe ended up getting the Canaries, and he was
walking
around.
You know the Dwayne Wade pitcher when he does the alley-oop and he's like this and LeBron is in the back dunking it over him?
Yeah.
That was what Welty alley-ooped the Canaries to me.
But wait, it's not finished.
I know.
It's not finished.
I
alley-ooped the Canaries to Joe. And then I didn't want to be too pushy with it at all because I had just kind of like I had interviewed Nick in the past, but I kind of like recently met him. I have his phone number, but I don't want to be like texting this guy asking.
Totally.
You know, oh, you had offered to give me a pair of sneakers. And during the middle of the full size run shoot, he just asked me out of the blue, did you ever get those Canary Dunks that I was supposed to give you? And I was like, no, I didn't. I think Joe got the pair, and I didn't want to be all like, no, man, you never sent me the shoes.
No, you were humble about it. You were not begging him for the shoes. It's on the record. You could watch the episode.
Yeah, and he was like, hey, I went into the warehouse the other day, and I saw a box with your name on it.
Wow.
Just sitting back there, and it's a pair of Canary Dunks just waiting for you. He's like, do you still want them? And I was like, of course I still want those shoes. It was so-
Wait. Welty, I think it's the white pair you're getting.
What?
No.
No, this is such a funny meta moment because the event that I described at ComplexCon also was me thinking I was getting the Canary Dunks ending up with the white pair. Maybe I remember the conversation with Nick incorrectly, Welty, but I thought he told you he had a pair of the whites for you.
Oh, I think man.
No.
Man, the
humbling.
Thickens.
The humbling.
Hold on. So, what was the follow-up? Did you follow up, Welty?
No, I need to, but I'm pretty sure he had said that
are you
going to
say
canaries.
Is it the yellow or the white pair? Or are you just going to send your address?
I'm pretty sure it was the Handle Canaries it? Because we had brought up that shoe and that's where the conversation came from.
I mean, let's see because we're recording this right now and we can't just go look at the full size run footage. But after we record this and once this is live, we're going to know by then. And either way, you're going to get a pair of sneakers. We don't know if it's the white Diamond Dunk, which is still a good shoe, or the Canary Diamond Dunk, which is a much better shoe in my opinion. And let's
only thing
honest,
yellow is going to be valuable. That text over the dialogue. Okay.
No, I think I'm pretty sure it was. It
Listen,
was
I hope you. I hope you get the Canary Dunks. I'm not trying to block your blessing here. I hope it happens.
Either
for
pair.
You.
Either pair is a win. And props to Nick. So Nick drops some more inspiration, even though we've had him on the podcast recently. I'm sure you guys re-inspired. I always say that episode really.
Put the battery in your back. Double A's, baby.
He's one of more stories, huh?
He's one of those guys that's just been doing sneakers for so long, and you look at what he's been able to build with Diamond, and you know, sometimes people create brands and it's hard to keep up that energy for like 20 plus years, and seeing and talking to someone who's able to do it just really inspires you to kind of like work harder at your own shit, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, guys. It's time. Let's get to this week's guest.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Our guest on today's podcast is a multi-hyphenate artist who touched multiple corners of the streetwear, art, and sneaker industries. He got into New York City's graffiti scene in the 80s and in 1993 was the first employee hired at the famed Zoo York skateboard brand. He established himself in the BMX and skateboard scene on the Lower East Side as a jack of all trades, and in 2003, he co-founded Dave's Quality Meat. DQM, as it was known, took a butcher shop theme and flipped it into a streetwear and sneaker store that was a go-to for top-tier products during the golden era of New York City's boutique retail. If you never stepped foot into the store, we encourage you to Google pictures to see sneakers on meat rack shelves and saran wrap t-shirts. Throughout the years, besides a well-curated product list, the DQM brand worked on standout collaborations like a three-pack Nike Dunk High and multiple Vans collaboration that still hold up today. But in 2005, our guest would design an Air Max that was a game-changer in the pantheon of Nike collabs, the Bacon Air Max 90. Now over 16 years from its original release, the sneaker is set to drop again later this month on Air Max Day. We couldn't be more excited to chop it up today with the brains behind that design and DQM, Dave Ortiz. Welcome, Dave.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. What do I have to say?
Awesome, man. Yeah, we're glad to have you.
Dave, you were born in 1970, Brooklyn, East New York. I want to know, how did sneakers make an impact on you back then?
Well, I mean, back then, if you had a pair of clean Pro Keds, that was it. You know, there wasn't really many different, you know, shoes to choose from in the 70s. But in the 80s, the Puma Clyde came out, and that was like the joint. And I remember 1977 or 78, I got a pair of blue and white Puma Clydes, and I got them from Busta Brown. I was playing hide and seek in my friend's basement. And I remember trying to hide behind this door. And I remember putting like 1 foot back. And when I put my foot back, I literally, my left shoe, I stepped it into a can of brown paint.
No.
And I fucking ruined the front end of my and then I was like, oh my God. And then, you know, back then, you know, if you, you know, $29.99 for a pair of shoes was like buying Jordans.
Yeah.
I came out and I tell my mom and my dad, and they were like, fuck you, I'm not buying you shit. You know, those are your sneakers. And my dad's like, I can fix it. And he fucking takes out turpentine and he fucking tries to clear it. And I have the right shoe is perfect. And then the left shoe, the front end is like a faded, like sports car, you know, like this whitish brown, white to navy blue. It was horrible. And I had to go to school with those. And, and kids made fun of me and they cracked jokes and snapped on me. And, you know, it builds character.
Was Puma the shoe in Brooklyn at the time, or were people starting to pay attention to Nike and what Adidas was doing in America then too?
No, Puma Clydes were, that was 1980s, you know, B-Boy, 79 to 80 was the, that era. Run DMC came onto the scene, and then it was like my Adidas, and, you know, you made the switch. I mean, some dudes wore the real true B-Boys that were breakdancing still rocked the Clydes. And you had to have the fat laces matching the BVD. And then when you wore your BVD, you wore the short sleeve in one color, like the color tone of the shoe. And then you had a tank top that was the color of the stripe. And then you had a matching, you had like this B-boy hat, kind of like my fake Supreme hat.
Okay.
And it was like mad high. And it was like, oh, you know, I got this in Jamaica. This shit was the best. And I love Supreme bootlegs. That's my thing. And then that's what you rock. You know, you were just like, boom.
And then what about when you were BMXing? I saw an old interview and there was a photo of you. You were like, I think you were wearing Jordan 1s. How far away was it when you got into like Jordans?
In the 80s, when the Jordan came out, you know, you could buy them at Modell's and they were a dime a dozen. You know, they had them in the bin. Where no boxes, you know, and you went to the bin and you got a pair of blue and blacks, and
How much?
Get those. They were probably at $29.99 too, as well. You know, they weren't really that expensive, and it was the one shoe that a lot of skaters and BMXers wore because of the bottoms were so flat. And you could, you know, especially for riding BMX bikes, you wanted a flat surface so your pedals, you know, you're on your pedals flat.
Dave, I know that, you know, the kind of the genesis of Dave's Quality Meat is that, you know, you being into graffiti, being in New York and that whole scene, was there ever like a point, like being into hip hop and everything, that you were kind of like, I'm a sneaker head, I'm a collector?
No, never. I always got sneakers and I got whatever I could get, and I wore everything to death. Like, it didn't matter to me whether it was limited or I just bought whatever I thought was cool. I never really followed any kind of trend. I was always that weird kid who, and I liked the most random shit, you know. And for me, it was never about fashion. It was always about function first.
Weren't you going into basements too and digging through, kind of digging in the crates?
We would go to different stores, old, like out in Brooklyn, deep in Brooklyn, kind of like Bay Ridge area. You would find like some old shoe store, some old Jewish man that had like dead stock, and we'd buy all of those. You know, once that well got dried up, then we had to smarten up. And what we did was a friend of ours, Joe from Clientele, you know, he'd be like, yo, I'm going to London. And he'd be like, give me some money. And we'd give him money and he'd go to JD Sports and buy all the stuff that was general release over there was really hot over here. And we'd get them and he'd fill a duffel bag and then, you know, flatten the boxes. And then we'd like bring them to the store and then re-put the boxes together and we would sell all that stuff.
Do you remember specific models from that time that he was bringing over? No.
I don't recall. I mean, it was all sorts of stuff.
And this was stock for the store, right?
Yeah, this was inventory for the store.
Yeah. So when you first opened DQM in 2003, did you have a Nike account at all? Or you guys were just sourcing product however you could?
A friend of mine in the beginning, you know, remember that store, Ricky's?
Was it like a Halloween store?
Yeah. The Halloween and like cosmetic stuff and weird stuff. Ricky of Ricky's had a collection of Jordans and Air Force Ones, and he gave them to us. And we
like original stuff,
just all original stuff that he had. And we opened up the store with that. And then we got our Nike account shortly after. And we started to sell regular, you know, tier one and SBs.
What was that conversation like in terms of convincing Nike that this was an important store for them to support?
Well, see, I already had a history with Nike because Sandy Bodecker came to New York. Yeah. Sandy came to Zoo York and we had just designed the Zoo Dunk. Eli did that, Eli Gessner. And me and Eli go way back. We've been friends since 1988. Mm-hmm. And so we had that relationship. And then at the time I was dating this girl, Jen, and she was friends with Jesse LaVea and Darla Vaughn and Joelle Chapman. Joelle Chapman was the woman in charge of all of the downtown accounts. So I was always friendly with her. And, you know, she came to the store and was like, holy fucking shit, this place is insane. Yeah. You know, like, who does this? Who opens a store designed like a butcher shop? This is so cool. Nike needs to be part of this. So then a few VIPs came down and they were just like, holy shit, this is mad cool. This is
Nike VIPs or celebrities?
Yeah. No, Nike VIPs. Yeah. And then they were like, we need to be part of this. And then they let me get my tier one account. And then Sandy Bodecker obviously gave us our SB account because we did the zoo. I have history with the Zoo York dunk. I also did, while we were at Zoo York, me and Eli both designed the Zoo York blazer.
Right, 2003.
Yeah. So we did that blazer. And so I already had a track history, you know, with the dunk into the tier zero products with Jesse. And it was just like that. And then shortly after that, Jesse was like, do you want to make a sneaker? And I was like, yeah, sure. He was like, okay, you have, you know, XYZ months to do it. Get it to me. And then that's the bacon story happened, which is completely insane.
And the store, I was an intern at Complex at the time, and I was picking up samples to shoot for the magazine. I always would go into the store. It was, like you said, and how everyone knows, it was a store unlike anything else. Do you remember, like, specific people coming in? I know that you're not someone who is starstruck or anything, but it was, like, the store in the golden era. Do you have any stories of, like, some celebrities who we may not expect coming in and buying stuff?
Oh, yeah. My favorite was Huey Lewis from Huey Lewis and the News. Wow. He came in and he was with his son, and his son was into sneakers. And I was just fucking blown away. I was fucking Huey Lewis, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was just like, you know, like, I mean, he's famous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was just like too hip to, and I was I'm a nerd, to be honest. And I was like hip to be square, you know. It was just such a great song. And yeah, he was one of my favorite. And Jimmy Fallon used to come a lot.
Okay.
And we would crack jokes, and he would be like, "Man, you're so funny." And we would just snap on him. One day he came in and he was so sweaty, and I was like, "Dude, what is up with you?" And he's like, "It's hot outside." I was like, "It's not that hot." I was like, "You're overly hot, you know." And then I was like, "But in a bad way."
No, Jimmy was buying a lot of heat back then, like Air Max 95s and things like that. So that's interesting.
Yeah, he was getting them from me, and he would come in a lot, and we would always crack jokes and snap on him. And he loved it because we treated him like one of the skaters that came in, and we would just start goofing around and be like, "Yeah, you rockin', you're a bum." Blah, 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 you know? And he was hung over one time, and he showed up, and it was hilarious. And I was like, "What happened to you last night? You look like me."
Dave, you mentioned that you kind of make them feel like, you know, they were part of the crowd. I'd seen in like past interviews where you talked about you kind of wanted to dispel that like arrogant myth of the downtown sneaker scene where, you know, it was too exclusive, like you guys, like your stores were too cool for the customers. Can you explain that to like our audience who may not be familiar with it and why you weren't cool with that?
Well, my whole thing was I wanted to be the opposite of Supreme. Like, Supreme is the number one spot, right?
Right.
And everybody is fighting for number two, three, four, five. And I felt like if we could be number two and be user friendly, you know, almost like a PC computer instead of a Mac, I wanted people that could come in and just, you know, hang out. Like, I didn't care. If you hung out, you know, you gave me something to do. I talked to you. What am I going to sit there and be quiet and look like I'm working at a gallery? So my whole thing was to just kind of chit chat and learn who my customer base was. And that's how I basically learned what they wanted and made product based on what they liked. You know, I didn't kind of try to like force feed them like, "This is cool." I was listening to what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of music do you like? What kind of movies do you like? Oh, what'd you see last night? What'd you do this week? I would ask people, "What'd you do this weekend?" And they'd be like, "Oh, I'm going around shoe shopping." I'm like, "Why are you doing that?" I'm like, "There's so many skate parks, you know." I'm like, "I'm stuck here, and you're like, dude, what are you, come on, stop wasting time."
Was it a sneaker scene back then for you, Dave? Like, I wonder really, because I know you're not that much tapped into sneakers right now. So I just wonder, like, did you feel like you were part of this scene of young retailers in the area at the time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was me. It was Clientele. It was Classic Kicks. It was Brooklyn A-Life. Projects, A-Life. So, yeah, I was part of that. I was part of that crew, and Stash and Recon, and so I was part of. I was equally as part of this whole ecosystem where kids, you know, it was a track. You know, you went to Supreme, then you walked down Lafayette, and then you went to Classic Kicks. You made a right turn on Bowery, I mean not Bowery, Bleecker, and then you went to Elizabeth. Then you circled around Bowery. You went to my store. Then you went over to A-Life, and it was this track. And then you went to like Recon, and that was the track. And I was on the track, and it was part of people's like regiment. You know, go to New York, go see these five stores, and blah 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 blah.
I want to get to the bacon. The first time you said that, Jesse said you had like 3 months, and did you procrastinate a little bit for the deadline?
A little bit.
Isn't there like a famed story about that you know, you had 3 months, but
I was trying to figure out. First I asked my partners what shoe, you know, at the time I asked Chris and his brother Jones, and I, because you know, we're equal partners, right? At the time. And I want, you know, I was like, I'm gonna design this thing because this is my whole, and they were like, whatever, you know, make a shoe. So I said, well, what is the silhouette that you love the most? And they were like, Air Max 90, that shit is fly, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that is kind of fly. Mm-hmm. I do like that shoe. Okay, I'll make something cool. And they were like, okay, make something, you know. And they forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And I also forgot about it. And I remember I got it was like Friday night, and I got a text or some shit, or and Jesse was like, hey, man, I need that shoe by Monday. And I was like, no problem. I'm on it. I'm almost done. And not even remotely close. And this is back when people had Blackberries, you know, that was the cool thing. And I waited till Sunday. I was out all night. And I was like, fuck, I have to do this thing. You know, here's my opportunity. I can't blow it. And I didn't even have a computer.
Wow.
I didn't have a computer. I was just like stumbling drunk over to my friend's house, Tom, who Big Tom, and he was a bag designer for Stussy and Supreme, and he does all sorts of different bags. He worked at Paul Smith and whatnot. Anyways, so I show up at his house and he's like, Jesus Christ, you're a mess. And I was like, I'm still hammered, and I'm like, I'll be right back. I gotta get a sandwich. And he's like, all right, I'll turn my computer on and we'll figure something out. And then I'm in the Key Food on Fifth Avenue and like President Street down in like Brooklyn. And I'm wandering around and I'm like, oh, get bread and cheese and eggs. And then I just looked over and it just hit me, that aha moment of like bacon. And I was like, oh my God, I love bacon. And I was like, what if I designed the shoe to look like bacon? And then I started thinking about the shoe and all the different layers. And then I started looking at the bacon. And then I was like, fuck. And then I buy 5 different packs of bacon.
Okay.
I buy 5 different packs of bacon, a half a dozen eggs, a thing of like Kraft cheese, like 8 slices, and Wonder Bread. And I walk up and the lady's like, you think you have enough bacon? And I was like, nobody has enough bacon. So I show up at my friend's house and he was like, what the fuck's with the bacon? And I was like, that's the idea. Mm-hmm. And he was like, really? And I was like, that's the idea. I'm going to need 5 plates and a Pantone book. And we sat there and we looked at bacon and we just studied it. And I was like, look at how this looks and look at how this looks. And I was like, and there's a little bit of red here. And I was like, okay, let's kind of like, and he pulled up, he drew the CAD, and then it was just plug and play. And we kept moving things around and then we had it. And I was like, do you think they could color the air bubble? And he was like, let's try, you know what, just shoot for the stars and then let them tell you what they can't do. So, you know, we put the little pink, at first it was red, and then I was like, no, I wanted it to kind of to tie back to the toe, to the front, and I thought that would be better, and then we did that. And just recently, I had found one of the original printouts of the bacon, the first the cat, design, the CAD drawing. It's in one of my books, I looked at it and I was like, well, this is either going to be a colossal failure or a colossal hit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, 50-50 odds. And then, and for me, my whole thing is if I can make 10 people happy with it, then I'm a success. Uh-huh. I keep my expectations really low, so I'm not disappointed. And I was like, all right, it's 10 people. And then I got me, and then I got Tom, and I was like, I just need 8. And then I showed 8 other people, and they were just like, yeah, this is kind of cool. And I was like, I'll take a kind of cool, you know, and I submitted it, you know, after I reviewed it with 8 other friends, and they were just kind of like, whatever, you know, pink, come on. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, dude, it's fucking dope. I was like, too many people making the colors are too hard.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to switch it up just like the shop. I'm going to switch it up, go in the exact opposite of what everybody's doing. And it worked. And then when the shoe came out, it was like sort of successful. It wasn't a hit. It was cool. People were like, yeah, you know, and you could walk in.
On the day of release, it wasn't that hard to come in and buy a pair.
You only had 48 pairs at first, right? That's what you
released. No, we had the Hyperstrikes were 48 pairs. And the regular general release, I think we had like 200 pairs. Mm-hmm. And, we sold them all slowly. Mm-hmm. We sold 100 pairs. And then Joelle found 200 pairs. She was like, listen, I have 200 pairs. Do you guys want them? Or I'm just going to off price these. And we were like, no, we're going to take them. And we sat on them. And then we slowly kept re-release dropping them. And as time went on, people got hip. And then they got it. And they were like, oh, this is bigger than what most people are thinking right now. And it was just a slow burn. And here we are 17, 18 years later.
Do you remember ahead of the shoe's release when you first got a sample and what your reaction was?
I didn't get a sample. It was just done.
You didn't see the shoe until it was ready to drop in your store?
Yep.
Do you remember first opening that box and seeing the shoe in real life?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I was psyched. And I was just like, fuck, they didn't do what I said. And then my partner Chris was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I told them that I wanted bacon bits, the little salt thing, because I wanted the whole experience to be like you opened it and you saw this thing and it looked like bacon. Uh-huh. And then you had a smell of bacon. Yeah. And I was like, if they did that, then the shoe would have been dope. But then there was an issue with Nike saying that they can't ship food.
Oh, okay.
That's what, Dave, this might sound really strange, but when I heard the story about you talking about buying all the packs of bacon and opening them up and staring at them all night and trying to design the shoes, how distracting was it smelling all that bacon in front of you and trying to think creatively at the same time?
Oh, we cooked it and ate it. It wasn't distracting at all. I mean, I really have a weird process when I make my art and stuff like that. So for me, it wasn't all that crazy. It was just part of one of my adventures of making something. And I do all sorts of random shit, Like, I'll try pretty much anything when I'm creating art in my paintings or silkscreen stuff. Mm. I'll drag the kitchen sink into it. I'll throw it on the floor. I'll pick it back up. I want the dirt. I want all the grime. Like, that's why the Hyperstrikes, if you look at the toe box, it's this cracked leather. Mm-hmm. But what I had them do was stretch out all the leather and then scuff up the leather. So every shoe is different.
That's a detail that I actually, knock on wood, have – I got a pair back in the day, and the scuffs on the toe box is really, really a detail that if you don't look closely, you miss it, but it's a very important detail. So, yeah, talk about that more. That's one of my favorite parts of the shoe.
So for me, like with the Hyperstrikes, I wanted, even though it was only 48 pairs, my whole thing is individuality. Mm-hmm. Each person, the shoe doesn't make you cool. By no means. It's you. You wear them with what your outfit, and that's what makes it dope. And for me, I was like, I can make individual shoes, and then each person will be their own character based on the shoe. So none of them match. And for me, that was super important. And I was just like, you have to do this for me, Jesse. You have to do this. That's the one thing I asked for. Anything else, I didn't care. I was just like, I'm sure it's going to look great. Don't worry about sending me a sample. Like I was like, but you have to do this, for these. And he was like, all right, whatever. Because he was just like, I don't think Nike is going to feel comfortable about doing this on general release shoe, because – some kids are going to be like, oh, I want the scuff on the center and I wanted, mm-hmm. And they couldn't control that. So he said, for the Hyperstrike, those are yours. We don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. We'll just do what you say. But for these, we have to do this. And I was like, all right, I'll settle for that.
Did you get a feedback from Nike? Did they see it as a big success? I know in the beginning, like you said, it was kind of a slow burn, but it ended up being what a lot of people would consider a classic. Was Nike super happy with how the project turned out?
I never heard. No, nobody really said anything to me.
It's kind of hands off. They just give you the shoes and
they were like, good luck, fella. you designed this thing and then you have to buy it from them.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that arrangement?
Yeah, It is what it is. I mean, at the, you know, come on. I was just happy to make a shoe.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, ultimately, Nike got all these kids, all of us young guys, to do these this design work for free. And then we buy our shoe that we design off of them. You know, they give you 48 pairs. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for that. And then you have to buy your pairs, and then you have to sell them, and then you have to pay your invoice. So, you know, it's great business model for them. No kid is going to say, oh, no.
You can't turn down Nike, right? When you're a young person with a sneaker store in the city, and Nike is the brand, and you want that moment.
Yeah, you'll never do it. No kid would say no. I don't care who today.
Yeah.
No kid would say no. Nike has the power, the strength to kind of get that. And I don't care. I'd do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You had to get some sort of validation. I mean, aside from the shoe being released all these years later, because not too long after that, Nike did those Air Max 95 360s in the same colorway, and then went on to do like the Huarache 90 current.
Yeah, that was burned bacon. And so the 90 is raw bacon, then the 360 is cooked bacon, and then the Huarache is burned bacon. Because we sent in those colorways as well. And I said, do the raw bacon and then whatever. You have these colorways if you want to do something else. And then Jesse just did them up.
Are those shoes still special to you? Like, I know obviously they're probably not the same as the original, but do they still hold a place like in your heart as far as your sneaker legacy goes?
Oh, of course. To this day, I'm upset because I never got a pair of Huaraches.
What size do you need?
10.5.
I got you, Dave. I got you. I 100% have the DQ, that same colorway from 2009, right? The current 90?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, I think I've told the story on here before, but I remember when those hit outlets, and I remember vividly buying up a pair for $40 from outlets. So, Dave, I promise you, I will look for that sneaker, and I will get you that sneaker if I can find that sneaker.
All right.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, man, I'd be very appreciative. I'd trade you something back in return.
Another shoe that's close to done. I know you've worn this, and I remember wearing these so much working at Complex. 2007, the 3 feet high Vans collaboration, and you did the Chukka with kind of the butcher print, right? Talk about that.
That was project. Amazing. That I was love so that funny. Shoe.
Yeah, talk about that project.
Dave, I have these sitting up right here next to me. I can't pull them out because they're stuck in a stack, and the whole thing will collapse if I do, but they're just know they're right here with me.
It was funny. The guys from Vans showed up and they were like, we want to do a shoe with you. You know, what would you want to do? And I leaned to Chris and I said, what shoe do you want to do? And he's like, dude, the Chukka. And I was like, okay, great. I'll be right back. And I take my skateboard and I skate down to Bowery and I go to Bowery and Houston and I buy a pair of gingham chef pants.
Okay.
And I skate back, I rip the pocket off, and I hand it to the guy at Vans, and I go, okay, here's how we're going to do this. The body is this. I want a gold eyelet, red laces, and on the inside we want, instead of off the wall, we want off the bone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and that's done, and with a gum bottom. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, that's it? And I was like, yeah. And then 2 seconds after that guy came in, the guys from New Era came in. And I was like, oh, great. I'm so glad you're here. Check this out. And I ripped the other pocket off. And I was like, I'm going to need you to make me a hat. And I'm going to need it to be the body like this with a red D-Bone logo. And I was like, okay, great, great. And that was how I designed both those shoes done in like this, in literally 20 minutes. No thinking, just off the cuff. And it was just one of the greatest, one of my favorite. And people were just like, how did you come up with that? And I was like, well, gingham is black and white checkerboard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Vans is checkerboard. And I was like, and the chefs wear, you know, gingham pants. And they deal with meat. And I was like, it's a no-brainer. And it was just super fucking cool, you know?
I love those shoes because they could take a beating, too. I remember wearing them so much. And just a great, great collaboration for sure.
Is it crazy to you sometimes, Dave, that, you know, a lot of the work that you've done is viewed as influential and historically important in streetwear, but at the time it feels like a lot of it was just really off the cuff of you just coming up with spontaneous ideas, but then it's held in such high regard later on?
Now I do. You know, 20, almost 20 years later, my girlfriend, because I'm always kind of like, that's that thing I did, mm-hmm. And people are like, whoa, hit the brakes. What do you mean that thing you did? And you talk about it like it was just nothing. And I'm like, I'm always thinking that the stuff that I made is just like, and I'm always looking to make the next thing. And like, what else is better? And I never like to sit on my laurels of like being a one-hit wonder. So I'm very, cautious about getting too comfortable in stuff that I've made. And but now my girlfriend was talking with, we had dinner the other night and she was just like, I told her I was doing this thing with you guys. And she's like, oh my God, that's so good. And she's like, not too many people have had this type of impact on the mm-hmm. world.
True.
She's like, it's not just 10 people anymore, Dave. Mm-hmm. She's like, you have to really, appreciate that and take that in. And for some reason or another, it's hard for me to accept accolades or praise. People send me texts, DMs on Instagram, oh, your shoe. And I go, oh, that's, thank you for the support. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say other mm-hmm. than that. But I never really look at myself as a person that really did anything. It's weird. I just kind of I did those things and now I make vodka. Go figure.
Was there a turning point when you realized the stuff you were making was important?
I still don't think it's important. I still think it's just like a thing, a fad, and it's not that serious. It's weird, and I'm constantly pushing myself, make something else. And what else can you make?
Does that have to do at all with your exit from the business? I know you left DQM and the store went on. Why did you decide and when did you decide to get out of DQM?
I started to get really bored. And for me, I didn't want to be the guy who worked at a shop anymore. And I just personally was like, it's time to go. Mm-hmm. And
this is 2008?
2008, 2009. And yeah. I was just kind of over it. And kids weren't getting what I was saying. And then I remember this kid came into my shop and was like, hey, can you, he was like, I want to buy this grip tape. And then he was like, can you take the grip tape off my board and put the new grip tape on? And I was just like, that was it. And I was like, I'm done. I was like, dude, I was like, first of all, you're supposed to buy a new board. You don't change the grip tape. Uh-huh. You buy a new board. And I was like, why would you want to do that? And he was like, I just want this grip tape with the weed on it. And I was just like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. I was like, I've started to get too old. And the kids started getting younger and I was getting older. And I was, and like, they weren't getting my jokes anymore. And you just got to know when to bow out. And, at some point in time, you just got to get out of the way and let the next generation do their thing. And I find it important to do that because again, where you, it all boils down to being number 2, 3, 4, or 5 and Supreme is always at 1. Mm. So the number 2 slot gets changed all the time, And I was starting to be like, I started to feel like 4 and 5. And I was like, this shit is, I'm becoming whack. I'm starting to get corny, My t-shirts aren't moving as fast.
But in that brief period of time that you were at Dave's Quality Meat, you still did a bunch more shoes. You had Dunks, you had Blazers, you had a bunch of Adidas collaborations, yeah. You did a bunch of great consortium stuff, you did New Balance collaborations as well. Do any of those shoes stick out to you, like the Dunks or Blazers or Adidas as other ones in your head?
My Converse Project Red is the one that I really love the most because mm-hmm. it was so conceptual and nobody got it. And I thought that was great and it was just too much information. I was one of the first 100 artists of Project Red. I did a blue leather chukka. I cut it down to a half, like a chukka boot. I had hieroglyphics on it that said blood, life, and I had this this Egyptian god called the Carnivorous, which was a snake with a lion's head, and that was the god of protection of illness and diseases. And then on the toe clips it said cure all, and on the footbed it said what would you do for a cure, and then on the inside it was like raw meat, and then it had the stamp of my bag, and then the bottom was clear so it looked like a slice of meat. So there was so many things going on, and people
super conceptual,
like, it was so far ahead of anything, and to this day I think it's the best design that I've ever done.
Do you have memories of working on the Blazers or the Dunks from that period?
Oh, yeah. The Blazers was based on an Elvis song. Not the Blazers, the Dunks.
Blue suede shoes.
Blue suede shoes. And I was just like, and then it was just like finding the material, and I wanted it to be perforated because I thought that the sneaker would breathe better. Mm-hmm. And all my Dunk highs were stinky because I would wear them, and then, you know, I sweat, and I was just like, well, how can I get these shoes to breathe? So that's why I did the perforated leather. It's, again, function.
Function.
Yes.
The Blazers, to me, I always look at them and it reminds me of like Flintstones.
Yeah, that was Pebbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the little fruity Pebbles.
Dave, was there really any money in like a sneaker store at that time? Like, how hard is it to pay rent just selling shoes? Because this is what I always wonder when talking to people who ran important stores in New York City. Like, how do you keep the lights on?
Well, for us, it was smart that when I did my store, before I opened, I met this guy. I was in Hogs and Heifers having lunch, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and this guy comes in. He's wearing a suit. Hogs and Heifers is kind of a rough and tumble kind of motorcycle type car, and this dude shows up out of left field, totally being in the wrong place. And he buys a beer, and it's $4, and he gives the girl a dollar tip, right? Mm-hmm. And then the girl picks up the megaphone and is like, you cheap motherfucker, you can't make it $2? Like that. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You just handed him a beer. He gave you a fucking dollar. You mm-hmm. know, and the guy's like, no, don't worry about it. And he gave her another dollar, right? And then she, you know, he sat down next to me and he asked me, what do you do? And I said, I work for the skate company and I'm thinking about opening a store. And he said, really? He goes, I am a planner, New York City planner. And we just signed this development deal that's going to happen on the Bowery. He mm-hmm. goes, do yourself a favor. He goes, get yourself a location on the Bowery because right now it's cheap, and get yourself a long lease. And I was like, huh. So I searched the Bowery, found that place, and my rent was only $3,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, a weekend, I pay my rent. You know, I sell enough shoes. I was, you know, so it didn't cost me a lot to build out the store, you know, and we were making profit fairly easy, you know. So in the first 3 years, we made, you know, before year three, we were ready, you know, paid back all of our debt, and then mm-hmm. it was just gravy from there.
I know a lot of people have like these complaints about, you know, sometimes when you have a tier zero account, you have to stock all the crap in order to get the good stuff, you know, or being loaded down with a bunch of product you don't want from these brand relationships.
Yeah, that is true. And that's part of the hustle. But, you know, if you were smart, you pick the stuff. I always picked the stuff that I thought would sell, that was easy and it wasn't too goofy and it wasn't, you know, and then you get the hits. And as long as you hedge your bets on safe things, you'd sell it through. And don't buy heavy, you know, you buy a size run and you move it.
Mm. Dave, I heard that from people who used to shop in your store way back that you had a pair of like rare lasered Air Force Ones that you had just sitting in the store that people would try and offer you money for and you just wouldn't sell them.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the story behind those?
Those I got that was when they invented the laser technology, and it was they had this place called The Kitchen,
of course,
over in Beaverton, and I got a pair, and I they were Air Force Ones, and I'm not a big Air Force One fan because they're heavy, and you know I've had them for years and years and years, and then eventually one day I remember giving them to a homeless guy out of left field. Like, I saw this dude, he was down and out, and I was just like, here you go, sell these. I was like, you could get at least $200 for them. He was like, really? And I was like, here you go. And I just gave them away. Like, people would offer me money and I just didn't sell them. And then eventually I just gave them to somebody because I felt, you know, I gave away a lot of rare shoes to the homeless shelter guys across the street. Mm-hmm. And kids would get so upset. And I would be like, why are you pissed? That dude needs sneakers. Like, that guy
functional really, again to yeah. put on his feet again, to walk around in the
it
city
was
all night
function yeah. and people didn't understand that, and that was my whole thing, and I kind of needed that was something that I did to make myself feel better, maybe about myself or something, I don't know. It was weird. I would do that all the time. And that's the thing, if you're going to do an act of kindness, it's always important to, like, here I am talking about it, but usually I would do it without nobody knowing. It just kind of.
Right.
So, Dave, 16 years later, Air Max Day, March 26, 2021, the bacon is returning. How involved were you in it returning, and when did you talk about the conversation of this iconic silhouette returning?
It was just a phone call. Somebody, my RB gave my number, RB Umali. I don't know if you guys know him. He made all the New York videos, and he gave my number to somebody, and somebody called me, and then they were like, how do you feel about this? And I was like, yeah, I'm totally down. I was just like, make sure you guys tell Chris about this.
Chris Keefe, your partner in DQ.
Yeah. And I was just like, and just get back to me and let me know what you guys think. I was like, it's important. I was like, make sure the kids get them. That was it. That was all I cared about, was that a new set of kids get the shoe. And I was like, it keeps me, I was like, it's like pole position, you know, when you're driving a car and then you're just about to be out of time and then brr, I got an extra 15 minutes. I'm like, whoa, I'm cool again. You know, I was like, just in time. I just turned 50, you know, and I was like, I become relevant again. That's cool. All right. I'm in.
Is there going to be a lot of pairs, you think? Did you have say in?
I have no idea how many pairs.
No vague idea, Dave? They don't even tell you?
No, I have no idea. All I said was just send me two pairs.
And weren't the shoes supposed to drop last year? What's up with that?
The whole world fucking stopped.
No, I know that, but they didn't.
I
know that, but I know, but they didn't. They didn't tell you anything about like the shoes like being delayed or
nothing. Nothing. I'm living life. I make vodka. I'm trying to sell vodka. I'm doing all sorts of random shit. I'm baking bread. You know, life moves on. Like, I'm like, the last thing I think about are sneakers. Like, I have sneakers. Uh-huh. And, you know, occasionally I'm like, I want to wear a cool pair of sneakers. And I have like 8 pairs of brand, like, in the box, like, you know.
Yeah.
Cool sneakers, you know, and like 6 of them are Humaras.
Okay.
Because you said you, if you could do another shoe, you'd want to do an ACG. That's what you would want Nike.
I would do another. If I could, I would do an ACG and make some sort of cool hiking boot or something because I would wear them. I like everything that I kind of make. I make because I kind of want one. It's all functional. Like, I designed a project with Timbuktu a few years back, and I made this whole collection of bags that look like brown paper bags, and it was hilarious, the whole conversation when I first did it. And I was just, all because I wanted one. I was sick and tired of going to Trader Joe's and then having these brown bags, and I was I had one, I could just bring it back and use it, you know, and it's a brown bag. And I was like, it's the most basic bag. And I did like a brown, you know, bag like that. And then I did a lunch bag to carry my cameras. And then I did a 12-ounce beer bag. And yeah, it was pretty cool. Because I wanted one. That's the whole thing, you know.
You talked about your vodka, obviously an artist. You said that sneakers was a thing that you designed because you wanted them. But where does sneaker design rank for you in terms of all your projects? Do you look back at it and think of kind of your resume in sneakers?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that I did some cool sneakers. Yeah, sure, 100%. But I don't think that at the end of the day I was a sneaker. You know, I want to be. I do want to be known that I made these sneakers. Sure, but I'm mostly what if I, you know, if I were to die tomorrow, I hope that somebody was more interested in seeing some of my silkscreen artwork than sneaker stuff, because at the end of the day, they're just sneakers. You know, you'll step in shit and then they're ruined.
But they're still part of your body of work, right? They're still an expression of who you are or your art, right? Still,
yeah, but it's so far removed. You know, I've moved so far from that. There's, you know, more time. There's a lot of stuff that I did after that I look at and I go, oh, yeah. That's why when I talk about it, like, I'll meet somebody randomly and then I'll be like, yeah, you know, oh, you're into sneakers? Oh, yeah, I used to do those. And then they'd be like, what? I don't know. You might have heard of this shoe I did. It's called Bacon. And then they go, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did the Bacon? And I go, yeah. And people freak the fuck out. And I'm kind of like I said, I just kind of like, it's that little thing that I did. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's on the shelf over there.
How do you feel about what the sneaker world has turned into at this point versus when, you know, when you're doing Dave's Quality Meet and you said that, you know, it was tough for you to sell out of 200 pairs. And now, you know, that 200 pairs, if they dropped online, would be gone within 2 seconds. Does that blow your mind that you kind of like planted the seeds for that?
It's so mind blowing, but it's also kind of reminds me of the early old school hip hop artists. And if you think about it, these guys came out and they were like Rapper's Delight. Yeah. And, you know, they didn't make that much money. You know, there's dudes that, and then here you have the Jay-Z's and the Yeezy and the this guy and the that guy that make millions, and then that fuck kid, Yo 69 or whatever the fuck his name is. They make mad dough. You know what I'm saying? But all these early...
You're not a 6ix9ine fan?
Oh, dude. There's somebody who makes these videos about him and they dub his voice. And it's so fucking hilarious. It's so good. I've never heard one of this guy's songs. But I love whoever does these videos. So, but like these old hip-hop artists that paved the way to this culture. And I fall into that category. I'm one of these old school guys that kind of did this thing, which influenced these kids to do the bigger stores and the better stores, like the guys at Kith. You know, I think that they got a great fucking thing going on over there. Uh-huh. And I love walking past there. And I'll like sometimes I'll walk past there and there's a line, and I'll be like, what's coming out? And some kid's like, yeah, the Yeezy, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, in my mind, they're like, you know, like, that kid has no idea.
You got to tell him.
Like,
yeah. In my day,
exactly.
You walk a couple blocks east of here.
Yeah. And it just makes me smile and laugh because I'm so out of the loop and I don't know. And I'm just kind of like this random weird dude that's walking by with a little chihuahua. And I'm like, what's coming? You guys waiting for sneakers?
I'm so glad to hear that perspective of you, though, of gratitude and respect for what this turned into, because I feel like it's so easy to be the old person who doesn't understand what it turned into or who is mad at the level that it's at now.
No, I love it. I think it's wonderful. I mean, we did what we could do at the time, and we made what we made, and that's cool. And I'm very grateful for that. You know, and sure, who wouldn't want to make a lot more money? I would totally love to make more money, but that wasn't the time.
Right.
That wasn't happening back then. We were building a foundation of like this culture. And that was more, that part of the legacy of it for me is way more important than the cash and prizes, because the cash and prizes I'll get later, you know, doing something else. But just to be a part of this history, for me, it's cool. Like, you know, I have to say at the, you know, I'm humbled and honored that you guys are even talking to me. And I'm humbled and honored that my shoes, you know, people to this day love them. And it stood the test of time.
Yes.
Here it is, this fucking weird ass joke. that I was hoping to get 10 people to like, and now it's like this fucking world phenomenon, you know, that I get, like, all over the world. Like, people are like, you know, from London, Paris, you know, like, oh, if I come to New York, will you sign my shoe? And I'm like, why would you want to ruin your shoes? I was like, they're too cool for that. I was like, I'll sign your box. Don't fucking ruin your shoes.
Dave, what did you think when you saw, you know, the rest of a bunch of other concept stores pop up after you guys did it in the sneaker boutique space? Were you like excited to see what was next, or you're like, oh, I see what you're doing there?
Oh, yeah. I had a good laugh. I mean, in the beginning, I was salty. I have to admit, you know, there was some shops. There was this one store that I was really salty at, the muffin store.
Johnny Cupcakes?
Cupcakes, yes. Yeah.
You know what? It's so funny that you said that, because when I was looking at images of your storefront before we did this, and I'm not just saying this to gas you up, but it did remind me of Johnny Cupcake. You know, obviously Johnny Cupcakes was later, but I had that same feeling.
And I saw his store, and I was jealous because he did a great job, and that's the only thing that I was like, wow, man, this guy has fucking nailed it. I was like, I wish I did it like that, but if it took for me to do what I did, for him to do what he did,
foundation,
you know, and that it's all based on foundation, and I don't know if he would, maybe he would have had that idea to do that. I don't know what, you know, I always think because of this day and age of information and how everybody gets information at exactly the same time, exactly the same way. If you have an idea, 10 people have that same idea. It's a matter of who's going to execute it first and who's going to execute it the best. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know when Johnny Cupcake, maybe Johnny Cupcake had the idea before me, you know, and then he eventually did his after when I, you know, so who
knows.
Didn't
stop you from tossing a brick through his window?
No, I would never toss a brick through anybody's
window. Crazy. These guys are crazy.
But yeah, it was one of those things.
So Dave, one last thing. The Air Max 90 Bacon is coming back out. It'll be out in a couple weeks. What are you doing on release day? Are you going to have any special ritual that day? Are you going to watch what people are doing to get the shoes, or are you just not paying attention?
I don't know. I just recently bought a house, and I'd probably be upstate
cooking bacon,
sheetrock. cooking bacon and sheetrocking some walls. I don't know. It depends. If I'm in the city, I might go past one of the stores just to see what the hype is and to see if anybody recognizes me.
just stand on the corner like, yeah, so how about your shoes,
walk by.
Yeah.
What are you guys waiting for? Like, I can't wait. Like, I want to go by, like, Flight Club, because you know people are going to buy them and then go to Flight Club and then just be like, what are you guys doing here? You know?
You can maybe charge them $5 to sign the box.
Oh, that would be funny. No, that would be hilarious if I did that. But I have no plans. I'm grateful that they're coming out. I'm super stoked. And I hope, you know, some kid texts me randomly, like there's some contest about what's a favorite food to eat with bacon. Uh-huh. And then he like asked me, he's like, what's your favorite food? And I said, well, there's this sandwich that I like to get from this store called Gracefully. It's called Smokey the Bear. And then, and he was like, do you mind if I post our conversation? And like, I went to the site and I like screenshot the menu of what is in this sandwich. Uh-huh. And the funniest thing is, like, when you look at the screenshot, it says bear sandwich. And I was just like, oh my God, it's going to be like I'm into bears. And I was just dying laughing. And I was just like, oh my God, that's so funny. And he wants to post the conversation we had. Uh-huh. And it's just like random stuff like that I just kind of get a kick out of. And kids, you know, they'll hit me up and they can't believe I'm talking to them. Like I'm some random, like I'm a god or something. And I'm like, well, you DM me. Of course I have to talk to you. You sent me a fucking message. And I'm like, what's going on? And then I'm like, I'll start interviewing them and asking them questions and like trying to find, because they're trying to like, I'm like, everything you want to know is about me, about the shoes online. Yeah. I was like, well, what do you do? And I'm trying to figure out, again, like how I was in my store. Well, what do you do? What are your interests? What do you think is cool? What's the last movie you saw? You know, and that to me, when you take a general interest into somebody else, it's just humbling and not so, because at the end, I'm not that important. To be honest, I'm just a fucking bozo on the bus, you know?
Well, listen, it's going to be a great day. I don't know how much you're going to be paying attention, like you said, but we'll be paying attention. Great shoe coming back. To your point, very excited to see the kids, the next generation, consume these and get them. So, Dave, we can't thank you enough for joining us. And, yeah, we'll hopefully talk to you soon. And yeah, thanks again, man.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Thanks, Dave.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by Kyle Garvey. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.